Hi, it's Alan Lamberti on Weeby 108, and joining me right now is the legendary singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist Howard Jones. We'll be seeing him at the College Street Music Hall in New Haven on Wednesday night, February 26th. Howard, thank you for spending a few minutes with me today.
Well, thank you so much, Alan. Thank you for, having me on your show. It's great. Great to be here.
Absolutely. Now, this is a new leg of a tour from last year. So how's the tour going so far?
Yeah, well, it's weird because although it's a sort of second leg, it's completely different to the first leg. So I don't know if it qualifies as a second leg, really, because there's two things. We've got Richard Blade with us, who's doing an amazing sort of education about the 80s and playing songs and videos and stuff in between, ABC and me, and then opening the show. And then I've got a completely new band. It was which I wasn't intending to have, but it was like circumstances, some of them tragic, meant that I had to get a new band together. So and I really wasn't sure I'd be able to do it in time, but I did it, and they are so good that I'm absolutely over the moon about the new sound and everything. So yeah, it's very cool.
I was going to ask, you have done things. Your career began as, you did all of it. You
Yeah.
were all the musicians at once, and you have done solo stuff. You have done stuff with a band. So this particular tour, you have backing musicians with you, but do you have a preference? Do you like to change it up? What makes you decide
Yeah.
which way to go?
I can't rest, I'm always changing it up. Even every sound check we do, we change something, we add something, we adjust something. And it's just, I'm in a great place at the moment because I've always dreamt of having a band that was made up of really great accomplished players, but also that we used the latest technology to run the show as well. So we combine the two things. And for me, those are my two passions, the great players, great music, and using technology as well to push it to its limit. So you can give people a sound and an experience that you can't provide in any other way, and that's what always keeps me going. That's why I'm still here after 40 years doing it.
Well, we're happy to see you, and actually we'll be seeing you a couple of days after your birthday, so a happy early birthday if you don't
Oh,
mind.
thank you so much.
Now, actually, I think you're in Texas right now.
Well, we're in Oklahoma City now.
Oh, okay.
And it's been snowing. So I hope the bus will be able to get to our next destination.
Well, it doesn't snow that often in the Midwest, technically, I guess that's still the South. But we've had plenty up here. It's been very cold here. So I think there will still be snow when you get here.
Oh, right. Well, it'd be nice and warm and toasty in the venue.
Although I was looking on your social media not too long ago, you had a wacky incident at another venue. Like halfway through, there was like a gas leak or something.
Oh, yeah. You never know what's coming around the corner. Yeah. So this is in Orange County. We, ABC did their set and Richard did his bit. And then all of a sudden, the banging on my door, in the dressing room, saying everyone has to evacuate the building. There's a gas leak, and so the whole audience, 2,000 people, and artists and crew and everyone out on the streets. There was 14 police cars
oh
and
my gosh.
Two fire engines. It was quite dramatic, and we hoped that they'd fix it quick and then I'd be able to do my set. But no, they sent everyone home. So, and there was such a good atmosphere. anyway, we will go back and do another gig soon. Yeah.
Was that a first time? I mean, you've played a lot of concerts. Was that the first time something like that has happened?
I think it is. I think it is. I think that is the first time that I haven't been able to play because there's been like an act of God or whatever they call that. You know what I mean? It was actually quite dangerous. I mean, it was a major gas leak. So it wasn't like, sort of just a bad smell somewhere. It was this
sure.
was a serious thing. And it was, yeah, so they fixed it and but we didn't get to play. So,
Well, you have a positive attitude. Everybody was okay, and that's really what
that's
matters.
the important thing. And I went on socials and said, sorry, we couldn't do it tonight, but everyone's safety is the most important thing. And it was great because I've been out on the street with the fans, they were shouting at me and like trying to get selfies and stuff. It was chaos, but fun though. It was fun.
Well, I think you're known for being very accessible, very fan friendly. I think your fans expect it of you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I expected of myself as well. I mean, I've got to respect. I mean, this is why I like to do meet and greets before the show, because I get to meet people that are going to be in the front row, and so I know where they came from, I know how far they traveled, I find out a bit about them, and it's like I don't want to live in a bubble my whole life, unconnected to the people that listen to my music, so I very much make a lot of effort to have some interaction with the fans and find out who they are and what and it's amazing. I mean, there was a lady the other day that I met. She's a surgeon, and she says she plays my music in the theater, the surgery theater, to calm everyone down and to put them in a certain mood, as she does her operations on people. So I said, oh wow, that is so cool. So I would never know that unless I actually met the person,
Or unless you were being operated on.
Yes, in fact, I might choose her to do any operations I need.
Well, I guess it really just speaks to your music, your songwriting. As an artist, your music's very positive. I mean, you know all your songs. I don't. I, but I, it's hard to find anything that might be cynical or negative. Or and I know you've spoken in the past about how critics, I think kind of expect that from artists, but you've seemed to have always resisted that.
Yeah, I mean, it was always my intention right from the beginning to be that person who wrote lyrics that would uplift people and give them a boost. I really wanted to do that. It's not that I'm a stranger to cynical thought and, cynicism. That's in me like it is in all of us. But for the music, the music to me should be, the uplifting and of use. So if you're feeling like the world's getting right on top of you bung on, things can only get better, and you suddenly feel another boost of energy. And that's what I wanted to do right from the beginning. And I've kept to that, through my career.
Were you ever tempted to go in a different direction? Like some of your contemporaries, the new wave bands could have gone either way.
No, I really, I think that, everyone's got to do what they've got to do, and there's absolute room for people sharing, the gloomier side of life through music, but it was never going to be my thing. I wanted to do, I when I heard music, it encouraged me and made me want to live my life in a, more positive way. So I wanted to do that with my work, so stuck to that.
Stick to it, and that's what we're going to be getting on this current tour with ABC. Well, we'll be seeing you February 26th, the New Haven at the College Street Music Hall. You're going to be doing your hits. We're looking forward to that. I've always wondered, there's the two versions of No One Is to Blame. You had the album version, and it's not a remix. You redid it for the single edit. What was the impetus behind that? Do you have a preference, and which one do you usually do in concert? Do you which arrangement?
Okay, well, it's
It's a lot
really
of questions in one.
no, it's a really good question. Well, it started off, as you said, on Dream Interaction, a quite a stripped down version of the song, quite, almost bleak, and I always thought that, that there was more possibility with a song for it to be played on the radio, and I always wanted the music to go on the radio because everyone gets to hear it then, and so I I phoned up Phil Collins, and I knew Phil because we'd worked on the Prince's Trust charity things in London, and I really liked him, and we got on really well, and he loved the song and said yeah, he would do it. So over 2 weekends in Genesis Studios, in between him making a Genesis album, we put it together. And weirdly enough, the fans always liked the version from Dream Into Action. That's their favorite. My favorite was the one I did with Phil, and I've never been able to play it in its full sort of single glory until this tour, because I now have this incredible drummer called Doug Yowell, who's playing an electronic kit, so he's able to recreate that loop at the front that everyone knows, and then as the song goes in, and then the Phil Collins type drums come in, he does that as well. So we're at last able to do it in its full glory, and I was like, oh, I'm enjoying it so much every night, and the fans really liking it, so it's good.
Wow, that's very cool. That's going to be a good one to see that night. And obviously we're celebrating some anniversaries. I believe that album is it was it 84, 85?
The Dream Into Action was 85,
Who's
and
85?
yeah, that's it.
So it's the 40th anniversary of the album, the
Yeah,
song.
that's right. Yeah.
And it's also the 40th anniversary this year of Live Aid, which you were able to perform at.
Yeah.
Do you have any favorite? And I imagine in the next couple of months, there are probably going to be some, things that'll pop up online. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit of a resurgence of interest in it. Do you have any memories from that day? I mean, playing the piano in front of that building, that had to be nerve-wracking. Just you.
Yeah, no, it was an incredible experience, and I'm so fortunate that I pursued it, because I made the effort to say, look, I want to do this. We got to Geldof, and said, look, I really want to do it. I missed out on the single, Do They Know It's Christmas, and I really wanted to be part of it, because it was for such a good reason. And yeah, so I think a lot of people were worried about me sitting at the piano and playing a song, because the perception of me at the time was like the synth guy, and like they didn't know if I had any chops or anything like that. But of course, I've been playing the piano since I was seven. It was like, the normal thing for me. So no, it was great to play the song. I chose Hide and Seek to play, because it's a song about hope, and I thought that was the most appropriate thing for that, for the cause that we were raising money for, and it all continues to raise money. And so yeah, I had a wonderful experience, and I'm just so grateful that I got to be part of it. Yeah.
I would have, I think people would have anticipated you'd do, your current single at the time.
Yeah.
But to go back and to do something that's a bit more
Yeah.
relevant to the cause, I
Yeah.
mean, it makes a lot of
Yeah.
sense. It
Yeah.
is the right move.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, I didn't think it through too much. I thought, well, what's the most appropriate song to do for this occasion? And when I got to the chorus, the whole of Wembley joined in with me, and it was just a magical moment that I will never forget. It was like, wow, people were really joining you, and like willing you to do something great, and it was, tangible feeling that I'll never forget. It was great.
That's awesome. I'm jealous.
Oh, I'm sure you've done many great things in your life.
Well, for about 100 people.
Yeah, but you might have made such a huge impression on them that they go on to be, head of the United Nations or something,
I'll check in with
Never
you in 40 more years.
know.
Earlier, we were talking about, technology, and you're somebody who obviously you're right from the onset of your music career, you were very embracive of technology. I'm curious what you think of sort of the current state of music, because a lot of artists are discovered via TikTok, via social media. It's a lot of very DIY kind of things.
Yeah.
I'm curious how you think about that compared to the start of your career, if you know, I would think this is something you might embrace.
Well, I mean, it is so different from when I started out. But I mean, I've been moving, like adjusting and flowing with all the innovations that have come since, I mean, my first records were released on vinyl and cassette, and then CD was a small amount of thing. And look, where we've got to since then. But I think artists are still creating amazing music with the resources that they have. And we may not be able to hear it or access it very easily. We've got to hunt around and find it. And that's a good thing. It can be a good thing. But the biggest problem is really great artists not being able to pay the rent. It's much more difficult to do that now. I mean, in our day, it was like you had to get a record deal. There was only one way. You had to get through that door, and then you got your music to the people. But now people can get their music to people through streaming and online and all that stuff. But how do you make a living so you can dedicate your life to making great music? And so that's the issue. But I always think that creative people always find a way, they find a way to do this and to get through it. And things change, and you just have to roll with the times. And but people will always be writing songs because people need to hear songs, and it's so vital that we value culture and we value young people's ideas through their songs and their music. We've got to keep doing that because we're all diminished if we let that, fade away.
Very true. Very true. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens over the next few years. Technology, AI, all of it.
That's right. I mean, it's like I've lived through the times when, doing what I did with synthesizers, people were up in arms saying I was destroying people's lives and jobs. And I mean, seriously, they wanted to ban me from the Musicians Union. It was like, oh my God. So I've been through all that. And now, like, look at it. People are using that technology to do incredible things and whatever. And then there was sampling, and that was going to destroy the world, but of course, people used it in such a creative way. And there's always going to be some people ripping us off, but the majority of people are not like that. I believe they're well-intentioned, and we just have to support them.
Definitely. Well, we're going to be supporting you next week when you come to New Haven, the College Street Music Hall, live Wednesday, February 26th. Before the listeners and people going to the show can see you live, I believe you have a new live album or a recently released live album.
We played the O2 in London in March last year. Was it that? No, this year. Oh no, last year. Last year.
The year just
2024.
started.
It's like 2024. And we always record the shows, but this turned out to be really a bit special. So I mixed it, and yeah, so people can get that. I don't. I Do we sell it at the shows, Jan? I'm not sure. I'm not sure. No, but it's out there somewhere.
Something you just said reminded me. You said you record all the shows. Makes sense for an artist to do. But something that I read that was, I think, unique to you, or you were the first to do it. You were like instant releases of concerts for fans. Like that's very prescient for an artist to do. And obviously had to embrace a little bit of archaic technology to do that when
Well,
you did.
it was fun. I mean, it was during the time when nobody wanted to know anything about the 80s. It was like, oh my God, it's all over. It's all finished. Oh my God, the 80s. So we did this tour around the UK, and I had this idea, let's record it, burn it onto a CD and sell it to the fans that night. And I had a photographer there. We did artwork that was made and created at the venue, and we printed it up and sold them. And it was like such fun doing it. And those things, though, they must be really precious, because there were 17 shows and 17 albums, and sometimes things would go wrong in the middle of the show, but it would all be there. There's no editing. It's like you got the show as it was, and
Yeah.
it was a lot of fun to do. So I think we were one of the first to do that, and it was great.
That's an awesome fan-friendly service for anybody to do. That's very cool.
So what I did, but what I did was that I when I got home, because we run to click, because it was a very electronics setup, I was able to make a release by editing all 17 performances together. So you'd have a little bit of Southampton, a little bit of London, a bit of Glasgow, and where it sounded particularly good that night, and I chopped it all together
Oh,
into.
wow.
And it's one of my favorite records, actually. I'm trying, what it was called? Was it called that one?
Sean, sorry.
No, the one that Graham really likes. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it's out there. It's so long ago now.
it's cool. It's
No, and that's
that's
right. And we haven't had much sleep, so brain is
that's
like 50% functioning at
That
the
that's totally fine. I get, hey, you're in the middle of a tour and you're traveling by bus. Like it's the grind. Well, I will let you get rest because we want you to be well rested both for your birthday and for your show. A week from tomorrow night, Wednesday, February 26th, the College Street Music Hall in New Haven. It's Howard Jones with ABC and Richard Blade. Howard, thank you for spending a few minutes with me. This was really awesome.
Well, thank you so much for having me on your show, Alan. Really, really enjoyed it.
Definitely.
Great chatting. And sorry about my slight, tiredness. We just got off the bus. And we've just done four in a row here in Texas, which is, quite a lot for us. But
You get the night off tonight, at least.
we'll be back on the bus traveling to Omaha. Yeah, that's
Very
right.
nice. Hopefully the weather's better.
Hopefully we'll make it through the storms and the snow, yeah.
Sounds good. Well, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure chatting with you.
Okay, Alan, thank you so much.